President Trump claiming the intelligence community caught Obama cold. While speaking in the Oval Office with reporters yesterday, he touched on the criminal referral connected to Obama-era officials and their reports of alleged Russia interference in the 2016 presidential election.
This was every word you can think of. They tried to steal the election. They tried to obfuscate the election. They did things that nobody's ever even imagined, even in other countries.
Trump saying he does believe the allegations against Obama, adding that Tulsi Gabbard has thousands of documents. Meanwhile, Gabbard, the director of national intelligence, says there are even more documents showing Obama's White House did lead the effort to, she says, manufacture intelligence that Russia interfered in the election back in 2016. She says she has already passed along her ongoing investigation to the DOJ, the Department of Justice, for a criminal referral.
We will be releasing these documents shortly in the wake of the release that we did last week. I'm very encouraged by the fact that we have whistleblowers coming forward.
Former President Obama's office calling those allegations outrageous. And the Richmond office of the Federal Bureau Investigation under the Biden administration spying on a priest because he refused to talk about private conversations he had with a parishioner who was converting to Catholicism. That's according to a July 22nd report for the House Judiciary Committee. As Catholic News Agency explains today, according to that report, the Richmond FBI investigated the priest's background, monitored his travel plans, and even looked into his credit card information. The investigation was allegedly launched after the priest became uncomfortable with an FBI agent's questions about a parishioner and said he would need to speak to the church's leadership and an attorney before answering any more questions. The report provided to Catholic News Agency by Ohio Rep. Jim Jordan's office, offering more details about the extent to which the FBI investigated so-called radical traditionalist Catholics. The FBI's investigation into supposed radical traditionalist Catholics, ties to the far-right white national movement, was first revealed to the public through a leaked Richmond FBI memo back in February of 23. Now, although the FBI, under the former President Joe Biden, quickly disavowed the document, when it came to light, claiming it was just a single product of a single field agency, information later unveiled by the Judiciary Committee showed the investigatory efforts into Catholics was much more widespread, and the national FBI headquarters were also involved. The foreign ministers of more than two dozen countries have signed a joint statement calling for an end to the war in Gaza and for all of the hostages being held by Hamas to be released.
28 Western countries, including the UK and France, criticized Israel's drip-feeding of aid and inhumane killing of civilians, including children in Gaza. In response, Israel blamed Hamas for starting the war and prolonging it, saying Hamas is responsible for suffering on both sides.
Matt Bradley saying Canada, the UK, France, and Australia, among the countries signing onto that statement, U.S. Ambassador to Israel Mike Huckabee criticizing the statement as disgusting, saying that Gaza suffers because of Hamas and that blaming Israel is irrational. At a press conference following their pastoral visit, meanwhile, to Gaza, the Greek Orthodox and Latin Patriarchs of Jerusalem issuing a joint appeal to world leaders and decision makers calling for an end to the war, the release of detainees, and the beginning of a true healing process that restores life and dignity to Gaza and the entire Holy Land. In his opening remarks, Cardinal Piziabella insisting the two patriarchs had traveled to the war-torn Palestinian territory, not as politicians or diplomats, but as pastors, insisting the church will never abandon the people of Gaza, emphasizing that their mission was not to a specific group, but to all Christians, Muslims, believers, doubters, refugees, and children. The two issuing a joint appeal to world leaders and decision makers calling for an end to the war, again, the release of detainees, and the beginning of a true healing process that restores life and dignity to Gaza and the entire Holy Land. Brad Ford tells us there's new information about the man who ambushed firefighters in Idaho, killing two and injuring a third, showing he planned it and well in advance.
Courtney County Sheriff Robert Norris says they found sketches in Wes Rowley's apartment similar to the scene where the shooting happened. After a confrontation with firefighters, Rowley hid and shot one firefighter who survived, then two others.
Those firefighters died instantly and simultaneously.
In May, Rowley went to a Coeur d'Alene fire station and asked about becoming a firefighter. When he was told it took an application and physical test, he got upset and left, apparently to start plotting the ambush. I'm Brad Ford.
And the man who admitted to killing four University of Idaho college students back in 2022 will be formally sentenced later today. Brian Koberger will also hear from family members of the victims, but will not be required to tell the court his motive for the killings. He's expected to be sentenced to 4 consecutive life sentences with no ability to appeal. Jim Roop tells us the investigation into an explosion that killed 3 L.A. County Sheriff's deputies in East Los Angeles is now turning to Marina Del Rey.
A search warrant is served at a boat docked in the marina. Sheriff's homicide investigators, along with the LAPD and ATF, served the warrant. It's unclear what led investigators to the boat or if anything was recovered. The devices that exploded in the parking lot of a Sheriff's Department training center Friday, killing the 3 deputies, were retrieved from an apartment complex in Santa Monica on Thursday. I'm Jim Roop.
President Trump says if a federal judge rules against his administration following a hearing over its freeze on research funding for Harvard, he will immediately appeal and win. Correspondent Mitch McGam reports that both sides made their case at a critical hearing earlier this week.
A lawyer for the White House said it's the administration's policy not to fund institutions that fail to adequately address anti-Semitism. He added that the government has the right to terminate the contract, saying Harvard should have read the fine print.
Harvard suing after the administration withheld more than $2 billion in grants and contracts, alleging the government is seeking unprecedented and improper control. But a Justice Department lawyer claiming in court yesterday the administration has a right to cancel any contract if the school is not aligning with its priorities, and it's not clear at this point when the judge will make a decision. Meanwhile, Mark Mayfield tells us Columbia is disciplining now over 70 students involved in recent anti-Israel protests.
The school announced that the students would face punishments ranging from 2-year suspensions to expulsions. The punishments stem from a pro-Palestinian protest in the university's Butler Library back in May and another that took place during an alumni weekend last year. This comes as the Trump administration is withholding millions in federal grants from Columbia while it accuses the university of failing to address persistent harassment of Jewish students. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Customs and Border Protection touting its recent interception of hundreds of pounds of methamphetamine, that according to federal agencies, saying nearly 300 pounds of the highly addictive stimulant found hidden in a shipment of solar panels at LA International Airport. CBP saying the shipment was headed to New Zealand and officers were flagged based on prior intel, which allowed agents to intercept the drugs before they were exported. The agency has since released limited details on the incident and has not disclosed if any suspects have been arrested in connection with the attempted drug smuggling. And legislation proposed by New Jersey Congressman Josh Gottheimer to protect seniors from scammers is now advancing in Congress. The House has passed his Senior Security Act, which would create a federal senior investor task force within the Securities and Exchange Commission to strengthen protections and safeguards for senior investors. One of the goals of the task force to identify areas in which senior investors would benefit from changes of rules of self-regulatory organizations. Legislation following a spike in senior scams, with stats showing they have more than doubled since 2020. And scammers are getting even more sophisticated as they target bank customers and not only spoofing bank phone numbers.
When they call the victim, they actually show their branch that they actually you know, go to.
That's a Florida Broward Sheriff's Office Detective Pedro Cordero, who says they claim they're from the fraud department and people inside that bank branch are stealing money from accounts. And then they ask people to withdraw money or turn in a debit card and give it to a rideshare driver. So there's a lot of scams out there for all of us. Be careful. Coming up, we're going to take a look at a wonderful priest who gave so much to the world, to the church, and to our network, Father Benedict Groeschel. Stay tuned. I love Father Benedict Groeschel. I always felt a connection to him because we were both born in Jersey City, New Jersey. And when I would speak to him with that strong Jersey accent that he had, I felt like I was talking to my Uncle Angelo or my Uncle Frankie or my Uncle Benny Tomio. He just was such a sweetheart. I'll never forget when I interviewed him. One of the many times I had the opportunity to interview him, and this particular one that was very memorable was at the March for Life. I don't know how many years ago it was. It was right after he was in that horrible car accident. If you remember, he was hit by a car and he was severely hurt. But he showed up at the March for Life. He was in a wheelchair, but he came over and we did an interview. And before we went on air live, I said, "Father, how you doing?" He said, "Teresa, I'm falling apart. I got this going on. I got this going on, but I'm here." And he was. and he showed up big time for us, and we just loved him for it. So our wonderful friend Mike Peters in EWTM Radio put together this beautiful timeline of his life. So I thought, since we are recognizing the birthday of the great late Father Benedict Groeschel, that we would go through this. A little bit of his background. On the anniversary of his birth, he was a priest, he was a psychologist, a preacher, a retreat master, obviously an author, recorded more than 100 audio and video series, taught and evangelized on EWTN radio and TV, wrote over not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not 20, not 30, not 40, but 45 books, including The Courage to Be Chaste, Arise from Darkness About Depression, After This Life, which is a beautiful meditation on death and the afterlife, tirelessly provided food, clothing, and assistance to people in need, his greatest joy serving the poor and underprivileged. He was a great pro-life warrior. I mentioned that I saw him many times at the March for Life and also had the opportunity to interview him here on Catholic Connection over the past 23 years. Stood up for the unborn and was even arrested while praying outside an abortion mill. Supported truly Catholic colleges that tried to faithfully live and impart church teaching. Taught at various colleges and gave numerous retreats. One retreat was even given to now St. Mother Teresa and her missionaries of charity in India, after which he helped her establish her order in New York back in 1976. Okay, here's a timeline. And again, thanks to our friend Mike Peters at EWTN Radio for putting this together. Born in 1933 in Jersey City, Robert Peter Groeschel entered the Capuchin Order at age 18. Then in 1959, he was ordained a priest. In 1960, he became chaplain of Children's Village, a home for emotionally disturbed children, in Dobbs Ferry, New York. In 1964, receiving a master's degree in counseling. 3 years later, he founded St. Francis House in Brooklyn, New York, to help adolescent boys who could no longer stay at Children's Village. In 71, he received a doctorate in psychology. 2 years later, in 73, co-founding the Trinity Retreat House for Troubled Priests. As we mentioned earlier, helped Mother Teresa in 1976 establish her order in New York. 1980, helped Father John Harvey set up Courage, a ministry for Catholic men struggling with homosexual attraction. That was such an amazing thing that he did there with Father John Harvey. Courage is such a beautiful, beautiful ministry, and unfortunately doesn't get nearly the attention it deserves. Also in 1985, co-founded, and this is so beautiful, and I interviewed now the director of Good Counsel Homes every year at the March for Life, co-founded the Good Counsel Home for Homeless Pregnant Women. That was in 1985. In 1987, Father Groeschel and seven fellow Capuchins founded the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal, whose mission includes living a radically poor life, about 3 hours of prayer per day, serving the poor, and evangelization. Okay, now listen to this. Today, there are 115 Franciscan Friars of the Renewal and 31 Franciscan Sisters of the Renewal. The Friars of New York run two homeless shelters, a food pantry, a medical clinic, a teen outreach program, and provide weekly lunch in Harlem. Now, I can't believe that he's gone 11 years. And listen to this. Listen to when he died. 2014, on October 3rd, the Vigil Feast of St. Francis of Assisi. Coincidence? I think not. Well, we found some beautiful clips. I mean, there's so many that are available. Even if you just look up Father Benedict Groeschel, EWTN, you can see all of them on YouTube and so many other places where he was interviewed, his many shows on EWTN. But for the sake of time, we found two quick clips. And the one I want to start with is the one where he talks about the importance of silence and listening to God. We've been talking a lot about that because the Pope has been mentioning it. He mentioned it last weekend, this past weekend, in his homily and in his Angelus message about using summer as a time to slow down, to tune out the world, and to tune into God. And here's what Father Benedict Groeschel has to say about that.
Stop, pray, and listen. People don't listen when they pray. It says in Scripture, be still and know that I stop and pray. And we're afraid to do that because we're afraid we might hear something we don't want to hear. And if it seems suddenly that we are to do something that we don't want to do, that very well may be the will of God. I was praying about the situation in religious life, and suddenly it seemed that we were to leave our beloved order and start a reform movement. It's the last thing in the world I ever wanted to do. And that made me suspicious that it might be what we were supposed to do.
Wow. Be still and know that I am God. You know, Father Benedict always believed in forgiveness and always believed that we should give people a second chance because that's what God does. As long as we have a contrite heart and receive the sacrament of reconciliation and ask for forgiveness for our sins, God allows consistent U-turns. He knows we're going to make mistakes, and that's why we have the sacrament of reconciliation, as we discussed with Father Chris Alar yesterday. Here's Father Benedict as we wrap up this section, talking about never giving up on anyone, because if God is involved, there's always a chance that person could turn their lives around. Here we go.
So I think we should never give up on anybody. And there are in church history interesting examples. There's a Carmelite who was condemned to be imprisoned in the underground dungeons for practicing black magic. Can you imagine? Talk about apostasy. The black art, goats with the devil. And this man was down there in that dungeon, and he returned to God. He was excommunicated, but he returned to God. And crowds of people used to go down to talk to him and see him. Finally, the word got out, and they freed him, but he wouldn't come up. He said, I found God in this cell, and he stayed there and continued to do his preaching. Horrible.
Wow. Just a few clips of Father Benedict. And by the way, we have a beautiful thing available for you today. EWTN's religious catalog is having a flash sale today and tomorrow only to get more of the wisdom. And I'm old school. I like to have something in my hands to read. So pick up one of his books, in particular, the book Father Benedict Answers Your Questions. It's in stock today at EWTNRC.com. Again, 2014, he passed away. That was 11 years ago. It just went by so quickly. I'm just blessed that I had the opportunity to spend some time with him whenever I visited EWTN and he was there, or on the phone in radio interviews for the program, especially when I would see him in person doing his best to get to the March for Life down in D.C. Father Benedict Groeschel, what a gift. We're remembering him today on his birthday. And he passed away on the feast of St. Francis of Assisi, October 3rd, 2014. Coming up, we are going to take a look at the diaconate. And more specifically, we're going to take a look at some low numbers, apparently, across the country. And why is that happening? We will get the wisdom of a wonderful deacon. He's the editor of Deacon Magazine, Deacon Dominic Serrato. And he and I are good buds. I actually write for the magazine, The Deacon, a wife's column as a deacon's wife. My husband, Deacon Dominic, another Deacon Dominic, is coming up on 13 years in the diaconate. It's a great ministry, not just for the deacon, but the wives as well. We'll discuss up next. Welcome back. Great to be with you on Catholic Connection and EWTM production. And always great to catch up with my friend, Deacon Dominic Serrato, who's a PhD, a wonderful longtime deacon, an author, a speaker, and of course also editor of the beautiful The Deacon magazine, for which I write a deacon's wife column. He has a new book out, As I Have Loved You, Clerical Unity in the Heart of the Church. But first, Deacon Dominic, I do want to discuss, and this was really disappointing to me because you and I know, and Judy and I know as deacons' wives, and Dominic knows, my Dominic knows, how beautiful the diaconate ministry is. But an annual report from the Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate, and by the way, Catholic News Agency has an article on this that was posted last month, the middle of June, the number of ordinations of permanent deacons in the U.S. has decreased by nearly 200 from 2023 to 2024, according to a recent survey. That's very disappointing to me. I'm sure it's disappointing to you as well. Thanks for joining us, Deacon. Appreciate it.
That's great to be here with you.
So what do you think?
Well, I think that you have to look at things not in isolation, but in the broader context. And it can be argued that the diaconate is the largest growing segment in the church. So to see a small dip, especially in light of certain factors which we can discuss, factors which I think are generally temporary, is simply a little downturn in an otherwise upward rise.
Okay, so what are we looking at? What do you think is impacting this slight dip, do you think?
Well, I think, first of all, post-COVID vocational lag. I mean, there's a disruption in nearly every aspect of diocesan life as a result of COVID, including diaconal formation programs, ordination schedules, discernment retreats, and even in-person parish ministries. And these are key touch points for identifying and nurturing vocations to the diaconate. Some dioceses, including the one I work for, the Diocese of Joliet, actually delays our intake of a new class, which would account for part of this lag. There's certainly an aging diaconal corpus, and so many are going out where we have fewer coming in, but young people are unfortunately being discouraged for coming in the diaconate. I think this is most unfortunate, because if God calls and it's a genuine call, he's going to provide the grace. Other factors, including cultural shifts, formation, and limited resources, all of these add up to a slight downturn in an otherwise rising trend within the diaconate.
You mentioned something. You said that young people are being discouraged from applying for the diaconate. Why is that?
Well, I think the diaconate hasn't fully entered into the Catholic imagination, and people tend to see it as this sort of the grandpa club or a retirement vocation. Consequently, when people have young families, some deacons and some priests have actively discouraged young people from entering the diaconate, saying, wait till your family is settled. Now, that may well be the case in some cases. But the point here, Teresa, is formation is discernment. They're discerning, that is to say, the men in formation and their families are discerning the diaconate, but also the diocese is discerning them. And it may well be the case that they're not called early, but it may be the case. And I think wholesale say that you should wait is most unfortunate, and it fails to take into consideration the grace of God, which can be received if the call is genuine.
You know, that's a great point, because it seems as if, and of course, Deacon Dominic and I weren't blessed with any children of our own, but we knew many couples who were discouraged in our area from going into the diaconate because they had very young children. And it seems almost like an accepted, or everybody thinks that's the rule.
Right. And I was ordained at the youngest canonical age, at 35. We had five children at that time. We have blessed with seven children at this point. But and so I had young children, even in infants, even after I was ordained. Again, my call, I believe, was genuine. Certainly the diocese thought that way. And most important, my wife thought that as well. And so God gave us the grace to be able to do this. And I think that has to be discerned on a case-by-case basis. So a wholesale elimination of young people, I think, is most unfortunate, and it fails, again, to take into account God's grace.
Isn't it a concern, though, even with a slight dip, because given the number of priests, or lack thereof, we need deacons. I mean, deacons are needed, and I think they're going to be relied upon even further in the future of the church, in the near future, don't you?
I do. And I think there's two elements to that. The first of which, as you bring up, is the pragmatic element. Our priests are getting fewer and they're getting older. And therefore, deacons can, within the scope of their ministries, do some of the things that priests can do, and therefore relieve some of that pastoral shortfall. That's certainly, in fact, as a director, I would get calls regularly from priests who say, I need a deacon. And I'm like, let me check my closet. Let me see if I have any. You got to send them to me, and there's a pipeline, right, of their deacons. But there's something else going on here. And we've got to ask ourselves, I think, a very important question. And that is, when the diaconate was restored, there was no priestly vocational crisis. The seminaries were full. Parishes were full. So why was it restored? Was it restored for pragmatic reasons? Well, I think not. Why? Well, the diaconate is the preeminent witness of Christ, the servant to the world. I mean, that's what the diaconate really is. Everything he does flows from that witness to Christ the servant, which should be active in every baptized person. So I believe that it's a movement of the Holy Spirit to renew and rediscover Christ the servant across every vocation, both lay and clerical vocations.
What can we do to really promote the diaconate? Because it's such a beautiful ministry, and it's not just a ministry, as you said, unless you're a single man who's going into the diaconate. But if you're usually it's a married man, and most of the married deacons, most of the deacons in the United States at least, are married. Mm-hmm. What can we do to promote the diaconate?
Well, certainly from the inside out, deacons themselves can promote the diaconate simply by the exercise of revealing Christ the servant in their various ministries. But the other thing is that, and this is from Deacon James Keating, speaks about it not entering into the Catholic imagination. The catechesis is not there. Even in seminary, the transitional deacons are given very little, if any, formation on the diaconate. Oh, they receive formation in terms of the liturgical aspects of it, but not really in the sort of the ontological, the deeper reality, because the church argues that a man must first be on the deepest level of his being a deacon before he becomes a priest. So seminary formation, that means it enters into the imagination of the priesthood, it enters into the imagination of the episcopacy, catechesis, it moves to the laity, and those things together. Also, it would help if Catholic publications, particularly periodicals and so forth, popular publications, could write more on the diaconate. And you find very little written on the diaconate. We see this lack of imagination when you hear the universal prayer at Mass. Let's pray for our Pope, our bishops, our priests, our religious, our lay, on and on and on. And the deacon is almost always left out of that equation.
Mm. Well, our church includes it. My pastor is very pro diaconate, and he's always reminding people about this beautiful, beautiful ministry of the diaconate. Having a great conversation with our friend Deacon Dominic Serrato, author, PhD, speaker, and deacon, of course, editor of the Deacon Magazine. When we come back, we'll wrap up our discussion on the way we can help promote the diaconate, given the numbers are slightly down, and we need to keep them moving up. We're going to take a look also at his new book, As I Have Loved You, Clerical Unity in the Heart of Christ. It's published by our friends at Our Sunday Visitor. Deacon Dominic, how long have you been a deacon now? How many years?
30 years.
Wow, 30 years. Yeah, Deacon Dom, my Deacon Dom will celebrate 13 years in October, and it's gone by so fast. It's a beautiful ministry. We'll be right back. More on the diaconate. Stay tuned. You're listening to Catholic Connection on EWTN Radio Extra. Always love catching up with my paisan and my good friend Deacon Dominic, another Deacon Dominic, Deacon Dominic Serrato, talking about the slight dip in diaconate numbers over the last couple of years, but we always want to be positive and look at the glasses half full versus half empty. But before we move on to your beautiful book, any final thoughts, Deacon Dom, on how we can make a difference in the diaconate to get more people encouraged? Because, you know, it's such a beautiful ministry, not just for the men, but for the wives as well. I love being a deacon's wife.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're doing things, for example, right now on your show. So people are getting to understand, and of course, the next segment will get into that a little bit more. So I think things like publications, things like the radio and television, EWTN, those kinds of things are awful helpful, or tremendously helpful, I should say, in promoting the diaconate. But the point I made earlier is very important, and part of what my ministry is about is helping deacons become more fully who they are. And I think that we can talk about the diaconate, but when they see the diaconate, people see the diaconate, actually Christ the servant incarnate in the very work. That I think is the most important way to help the diaconate enter into the Catholic imagination.
And I think to encourage people, if they're curious, to make sure they call their diocese or their archdiocese. So, for example, in southeastern Michigan, the Archdiocese of Detroit, we have a meeting where they just bring men who are just thinking about it, and they invite their wives just to kind of hear the process. What does it mean to apply for the diaconate, the discernment process, the program, the classes, the formation, just to give you a sense of what's involved. So if someone is out there listening, and there usually is, that maybe somebody has it on their heart that they might want to discern the diaconate, I would go ahead and make sure you call your diocese and get into one of those meetings, right?
That's right. That's right. You can also go online to take a look at what they've got going on there. It would be the diaconal page. Contact the director of the diaconate.
Right.
But
diaconal
I'm
director.
Seeing a rise simply anecdotally, because we currently have about 20 men that will be ordained in August. We have two cohorts currently going on, and we haven't even begun advertising, and we have for that next cohort 13 men who've made application. So we're seeing a bump after the slight downturn. I don't know if this is anecdotal or statistical.
And what diocese is that again, Deacon?
That's the Diocese of Joliet, just
Joliet.
South of Chicago.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay. Let's move on to your beautiful book, As I Have Loved You, Clerical Unity in the Heart of Christ. Why did you decide to write this, Deacon Dominic?
Well, I think one of the things that I've seen, and it's a result of, I think, secular forces pushing in on the church, is that we tend to become much more functional than relational. Right, we're not human doings; we're human beings, and the relationship between priests, deacons, and even clergy in general, as in our society, tends to be functional. Think of it as two gears coming together, two cogs in a machine. When we come together, let's say at liturgy, well, we're connected. But then when we leave, we sort of live separate lives and far away. And just as in marriage, the importance of marriage and the unity of marriage to the well-being of the children, so too with the priests and the deacons coming together. And so there needs to be more work in that area. And the other thing is that it struck me very clear that Christ wants this unity because it's a unity grounded in him, Teresa. What do I mean by that? Jesus says in both Mark and Matthew's gospel, I have come not to be served, but to serve. That's diakonia. That's diakonos. He is the diakonos. He is the deacon, the par excellence. And then he says, and give my life as ransom for the many. That's sacerdos. That's priesthood. The diaconate and the priesthood come together in the one Christ, such as to split them up or to not have unity is to somehow split up the Christus totus, the whole Christ. And so the book attempts to find both theological and practical means to bring priests and deacons together so that they themselves could be mutually nourished and the faithful benefit from that.
How are you seeing a disconnect then? I mean, obviously you wrote the book because you see this is obviously necessary to strong former bonds and working together in relationships. But what are some of the issues that you've seen?
Well, I mentioned functionality. Now, the deacon is called to be a servant. And if
right.
he only functions with the priest, only connects at certain times, he doesn't get to know the priest. Well, you can't really serve someone you don't really know. The more you know, like in marriage, you know Dominic. So you know what he would want in his absence. And when priests and deacons don't have that, they don't understand each other in their absence. And I think that that is a critical thing. And so I see it there, and I see it in other aspects of church life, pastorally, liturgically, and a number of other different areas where we simply disconnect. And this is really symptomatic of a deeper disconnect in that priests used to live in community. They used to relate to one another. Now they live in separate areas, in separate rectories. And so the relationship of priest to priest also needs to be strengthened, as well as priest and deacon.
So what are some of your ideas? Share with us. Now, I don't want to give it all away because we want people to buy the book As I Have Loved You. But how do we overcome this?
Well, it's interesting because in the book, which is only five chapters, it's not a big book, but in the book, in each chapter, I lay the theological foundation and I lay then the pastoral application or how priests and deacons come together. And in the heart of the book, I talk about priests rediscovering their own diaconate because they were ordained deacons. But that notion of a transitional deacon is, while descriptive, very misleading because it hides more than it reveals, because they transition out of the diaconate. Quite the opposite. They have this diaconate, which is, of course, ontological, and of course, it's like an indelible mark. It stays with them. And then they're ordained priests. Well, the priesthood doesn't swallow up the diaconate. Rather, they both cohabitate or coexist in the one priest. In order for a priest to truly appreciate the diaconate, he has to fully appreciate and appropriate his own diaconate. And when he does so, the relationship between priests and deacons are strengthened, as with the bishop. Now, the next chapter, most interestingly, it speaks about the priesthood of the diaconate.
Diaconate, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is that all about? You say, well, you know, the catechism says that there are two participations in the one priesthood of Christ. There's the hierarchical or ministerial priesthood, Father so-and-so, and of course, the lay people, and that would be the common or royal priesthood. But I suspect there's a third participation because deacons are neither priests nor their laity, and that is the sort of the diaconate priesthood. What is that? Well, a priest is one who offers sacrifice in the atonement of sins. When the deacon gives himself in service, he is sacrificing himself because the quality of love is expressed in the depths of the sacrifice. And diaconia is not something I do, but someone I give my very self. So as priests discover the diaconate within them, and as deacons discover a priesthood within them, that lays a foundation, a theological foundation, grounded in Christ, who is a deacon and priest. And as a result, then we can move to practical ways. And the book then goes into how priests and deacons can meet, the reflection questions they might have, and how they can continue on past the book.
Why did you feel the need, which I think is great, I love that, I do that in a lot of my books as well, because it gets people to stop and think, but why the reflection questions? Why did you think that was necessary, Deacon?
Well, first of all, it provides an opportunity for both priests and deacons to come together, because mm-hmm. if we just come together, mm-hmm. guys are funny that way. We don't just get together for coffee and just chat about that. No, there's got to be a football game on or a common hobby or something. It's just the nature of the way we're wired.
Right.
And if we don't have something to speak about, we just stare at each other and then we go our separate ways. So it was important for us, I think, to have something. The other thing is that, to use an unfortunate analogy, it's not force feed and regurgitation. It's eating, it's consuming, and digesting. Reflection right. questions allow you to take the objective stuff you're talking about and say, well, how does that apply to me? And how can that help me live my vocation out in a more profound way?
I don't think those ideas, and I think they're very powerful, and going through the book, it really caught my attention as a deacon's wife, the diaconate in the priesthood and the priesthood in the diaconate. I don't think I've ever heard that before until I picked up your book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And it was a shock to me, too. You know, they say even a blind pig can stumble on an acorn. And sometimes I stumble on a few acorns. But it arises out of, goes back to my own formation, particularly theological formation, and the influence of Pope John Paul II and his personalism. So I, having in my path books, developed the theology of the diaconate and then developed a theology of holy orders because, and I describe in the book, a triptych, right? You got the bishop in the middle, and then the two flaps, the two sides are the priest and deacon. Well, if one is partially closed, the diaconate, it obscures the other parts. Moreover, the whole story can't be told unless both sides of the triptych are open. Developing the theology of the diaconate, the next natural consequent was how, and holy orders, how do these come together? And so this book really is part of a series of three books in which we deal with the servant reality now in the clergy.
Is this something you'd like to see in diaconate formation and priestly formation programs? I think it would be very helpful.
Oh, yes, absolutely, because I think that until we understand the full nature of holy orders, we're not going to understand the full nature of Christ, who is diakonos and sacerdotes, who is deacon and priest. And Christ is the perfect revelation of God the Father. And so when that's obscured, well, something of that revelation is obscured. But when that's revealed, God's revelation, which is ultimately a divine love outpoured, when that's revealed, then the whole world benefits from it. Not just the church, but the whole world benefits from it.
How much emphasis in your research and work over the years, Deacon Dom, have you seen the seminaries and the formation programs for priests talk about and help them with their diaconate to make it a really big part of their process to priestly ordination? Because I can remember so many priests, even some who are now bishops, when they were serving their diaconate portion of their ministry at our parish. They go on to be great priests. Now they're bishops or whatnot. But I don't remember hearing too much about that step, except to recognize that they were in that transitional period on their way to priesthood.
Yeah, in seminaries, unfortunately, there's very little formation with regard to the diaconate. And Deacon Keating, myself, and about three others wrote a piece in the journal describing the lack of priestly diaconal formation in priestly formation. I spoke to one time to a vice rector of a major seminary, and I asked him about that. He got a little defensive, and he said, "Well, we're ordaining priests." And I said, "But you're also ordaining deacons, right? I mean, you know, how could you be open to a sacrament you're not prepared to for?" So, right. So, and I talked to a priest, and he said to me, "Well, we had sacraments," and I said, "Okay, so you had sacraments, and there are three categories of sacraments. One of which is the sacraments of service, and then you've got two of those: one holy orders, one marriage, and then holy orders you got divided into three. So." That's not sufficient. So there isn't a lot of formation and that's unfortunate, because again, I think when the priest discovers his diaconate, this is critical, he discovers something about his priesthood. So look, a priest is a priest in a coma when he's asleep, right? But his priesthood enters the world through his diaconate. Think about this. We call it priestly ministry, ministerium diaconia. And so if they don't fully embrace their diaconate, they're going to attenuate their priesthood.
Wow. Really important stuff. And I hope this book gets into the hands of, even if men are listening right now and are thinking about applying for the diaconate, get a copy of this book. And I really hope dioceses pick up on this as well. As I Have Loved You, Clerical Unity in the Heart of Christ, by our guest, my friend, Deacon Dominic Serrato. How do we get the book?
Well, you can get it through Amazon or Sunday Visitor would be the best place to get it. And even lay people, if they want to get that for their priests and deacons, that would be a great thing, too.
Well, my deacon husband, as I told you, when the book came in the mail, he even grabbed it from me. I had to grab it back in order to do the prep for this show. Deacon Dom, always great to talk to you, my friend. Give Judy my love, and we will talk soon. Again, get this beautiful book, friends. It's just really well done and very quick to read, too, As I Have Loved You. Clerical Unity in the Heart of Christ. We'll be right back. I just want to encourage anyone out there who is listening, and it usually happens this way. You'll be thinking about something, praying about something, and then you turn the radio on or turn on the TV or go by a sign in front of a church, and it addresses what's on your heart. That's because God hears us. And I'm sure there's somebody out there today that's been discerning the diaconate. Maybe a wife is thinking that her husband would be a good deacon. Get a copy of this book, As I Have Loved You, Clerical Unity in the Heart of Christ. But in addition, as Deacon Dominic said, and as I mentioned, call your local diocese. They have diaconate formation programs. They have meetings. This is done all over the country, all over the world. United States really is way far ahead in terms of the number of deacons, but check it out. It's a beautiful ministry. And just go to one of the meetings and see what they say. But take a step. If it's on your heart, move forward. Slowly, if you know you're a little worried, I get it, a little nervous, but don't put it aside. Because if it's on your heart, then maybe God wants you to look into it. Okay, coming up tomorrow, the one, the only, Father Mitch Pacwa in the first hour with our cultural connections. My goodness, there's just so many issues to discuss with Father, including a recent ruling from the state of Washington now. They put the kibosh, at least for the time being, on the confessional and that whole thing where priests supposedly had to report if someone came to them with sexual abuse. That's one issue. There's all kinds of things going on in Gaza. He's an expert on the Middle East. So who knows? We're just going to leave it up to the Holy Spirit, and I'll give Father Mitch a call today to decide what we're going to talk about, because there's so many stories. Also, Father Tad Pacholcek, Canada's increased leniency toward euthanasia, what it means to the rest of us. And last but not least, Tim Graham, looking at cutbacks to PBS and NPR funding. Have a great Wednesday. We'll talk to you tomorrow, God willing, on a Thursday. Adonai.